Ever found yourself in the same argument with your partner for the 100th time, following the exact same script? Or wondered why your perfectly reasonable solutions get ignored at work? Rory Miller's Conflict Communication offers a startling revelation. These seemingly personal conflicts follow predictable, ancient patterns that operate below our conscious awareness. Drawing from his high-stakes experience as a corrections officer and tactical team leader, Miller presents a framework that works as effectively in life-threatening prison confrontations as it does in office disagreements. This groundbreaking work has become required reading in law enforcement agencies nationwide and has been embraced by conflict mediators, therapists, and business leaders. As best-selling author Tim Ferriss noted, understanding Miller's principles fundamentally changed how I approach difficult conversations. It's like having a superpower most people don't know exists. To understand conflict, we must first recognize that humans don't operate with a single unified mind. We function with what Miller calls three brains that often work at cross purposes. Each evolved during different periods of our species' development and serving distinct but vital functions in our survival and social interaction. The lizard brain, hindbrain, our most primitive brain structure, handles basic survival functions, fight, flight, freeze, and connects to physical coordination and sensory input. It's drawn to rhythm and ritual, forming habits and mannerisms that resist change because what hasn't killed you must be working. This part of our brain responds instantaneously to perceived threats, often before we're consciously aware of them. For example, you might jump back from a coiled garden hose before realizing it's not actually a snake. That's your lizard brain at work. The monkey brain, limbic system, manages social behavior, emotional responses, and status concerns. For our ancestors, tribal rejection meant certain death. So the monkey brain equates humiliation with mortal danger. This explains why people will risk their lives over seemingly trivial insults. The monkey brain perceives status threats as survival threats. Consider how a minor slight at work can consume your thoughts for days, or why road rage can escalate to dangerous confrontations over minor traffic incidents. These reactions stem from our monkey brain's intense focus on social standing and group dynamics. The human brain, neocortex, handles rational thought, planning, and complex problem-solving, but operates more slowly than the other two sections. When we're triggered emotionally, the human brain often goes offline, leaving the monkey or lizard in charge. This explains why we can logically know how we should respond to a situation, yet react completely differently in the heat of the moment. These three brains have different priorities and operate on different scripts, often creating internal conflict. The lizard cares only about individual survival and physical safety. The monkey prioritizes group belonging, status, and emotional security. The human solves problems logically, but gets overridden in emotional situations. Understanding this hierarchy explains why we continue repeating ineffective conflict patterns. Our rational human brain isn't making the decisions when we're emotionally triggered. Think about the last heated argument you had. Did you say things you later regretted? That's what happens when your monkey brain takes over. Perhaps you escalated a minor disagreement into a major confrontation, or responded to criticism with an emotional outburst rather than a reasoned discussion. The key to better conflict management isn't strengthening your human brain to control your emotions. That's evolutionarily impossible. Instead, it's about recognizing when you're operating from your monkey brain and learning techniques to de-escalate yourself first. This might involve taking deep breaths, stepping away from the situation temporarily, or developing awareness of your physical stress responses that signal when your more primitive brains are taking control. One of Miller's most important distinctions is between social and asocial conflict. Social conflict happens within groups, whether families, companies, or teams, and serves fundamental needs, creating and maintaining social groups, establishing hierarchies within them, and enforcing group norms. These conflicts follow predictable patterns that have evolved over millennia to maintain group cohesion while minimizing serious harm. Humans evolved needing groups for survival. A lone human historically faced death from starvation, predators, or hostile humans. This evolutionary pressure created powerful drives to form, maintain, and belong to social groups. Most conflicts we experience daily are social conflicts. They follow ritualized patterns designed to establish dominance without causing serious harm, much like male deer locking antlers to determine hierarchy without killing each other. Examples include office politics, family disagreements, or status competitions among friends. These conflicts often involve clear warning signs, escalating gradually through predictable stages. Verbal disagreement, posturing, threats, and only rarely physical confrontation. Asocial conflict, by contrast, operates outside group dynamics. It applies to interactions with those we consider other, whether hunting animals or confronting someone we've mentally placed outside our moral circle. Unlike social conflict, which follows predictable scripts and often involves posturing, asocial violence aims for maximum efficiency, killing quickly and safely without proving superiority. Predatory criminals, for instance, typically don't issue warnings or engage in dominance displays. They attack when they perceive maximum advantage and minimum risk. This distinction explains why many conflict resolution techniques fail in certain situations. Negotiation tactics that work beautifully for social conflicts, like workplace disagreements, may prove catastrophically ineffective against predatory behavior. When someone views you as prey rather than a social equal, appeasing them often increases rather than decreases danger. Traditional de-escalation techniques, like maintaining eye contact, speaking calmly, or showing submission, can actually signal vulnerability to a predatory attacker. Understanding whether you're in a social or asocial conflict is crucial for selecting appropriate responses. Most everyday conflicts are social, following predictable scripts that can be redirected through standard conflict resolution techniques. Key indicators of social conflict include gradual escalation, clear warning signs, and the presence of witnesses. By contrast, asocial conflicts often occur in isolated locations, involve sudden attacks, and show no interest in dominance displays. Recognizing these patterns allows you to abandon ineffective social responses and adopt appropriate boundary setting or escape strategies. This might mean immediately leaving a situation rather than trying to negotiate, or responding with decisive action rather than attempted de-escalation. The implications extend beyond personal safety into professional and institutional contexts. Organizations often fail to distinguish between social conflicts, like workplace disputes, and asocial threats, like predatory harassment, applying inappropriate resolution strategies as a result. Understanding this distinction enables more effective policies and responses at both individual and organizational levels. Our responses to conflict are largely subconscious, scripted, and designed for group benefit, not for individual needs or specific tasks. These patterns remain invisible to us, like water to a fish, despite being constantly present in our lives. From workplace disagreements to family disputes, these unconscious scripts guide our behavior in ways we rarely recognize or understand. Even long-term couples have predictable, word-for-word arguments they repeat periodically without conscious choice. A spouse might always respond to criticism with, "You never appreciate what I do," followed by the partner's inevitable, "That's not fair, I always." These patterns persist not because they make individuals happy, but because they signal stability to our monkey brains, which value consistency over happiness. The familiarity of these exchanges provides a peculiar comfort, even when the outcome is consistently negative. The monkey dance exemplifies these scripts, a dominance ritual between males that follows specific steps: hard stare, verbal challenge, "What are you looking at?" closing distance while puffing up, chest-poking contact, and finally wild, unskilled punches aimed at the head. Even trained fighters revert to these primitive patterns when emotions take over. This script is so predictable that experienced bouncers and security personnel can spot and intervene in the early stages, often preventing violence before it escalates. Other scripts include domestic violence cycles and reconciliation patterns, where abusers make small gestures of amends, not from genuine remorse, but from the monkey brain's need to complete the ritual. A typical cycle might include tension building, explosive incident, honeymoon period with gifts and promises, followed by a gradual return to tension. These scripts are ancient, predating language, and operate across all human interactions, from introductions to falling in love. Even modern dating follows predictable patterns: the three-day rule for calling back, the dance of who pays for dinner, and the carefully timed progression of physical intimacy. The scripts aren't inherently bad. They create social cohesion and predictability. They help navigate complex social situations and maintain group harmony. But seeing them clearly gives us the power to choose when to follow them and when to break free. For instance, recognizing when a workplace confrontation is following the dominant script allows you to consciously shift to problem-solving mode instead. When caught in an unhelpful script, you have three options: redirect to a better branch, like steering an argument toward compromise; choose another script entirely by adopting a different role, such as switching from competitor to mediator; or abort the script completely by focusing on the actual problem rather than the social dynamic, addressing specific issues instead of engaging in power struggles. This last option is difficult. Stepping off script leaves an unsatisfying, unfinished business feeling. The brain craves completion of familiar patterns. Remember that scripts aren't personal. They're about roles, not individuals. When experimenting, try handling a recurring argument as if you were someone else entirely, and watch how the script changes. A person who usually responds defensively might try responding with curiosity instead, completely altering the dynamic of the interaction. Groups generally come in two types, each with distinct dynamics and rules that can coexist within organizations. Goal-oriented groups exist to accomplish missions, valuing hard work and contribution, with status based on problem-solving ability. They form tight bonds during challenges, but disperse when missions end. Longevity-oriented groups exist to perpetuate themselves, with status based on rank and service. They value comfort over creativity and thrive on social rituals and protocols. Most organizations contain both types, creating cultural rifts between management and line staff who have fundamentally different priorities and communication styles. Line staff measure worth by problem solved, while administration focuses on relationship maintenance and organizational survival. This explains why memos about budget crises are interpreted as cries for help by staff, but meant as reassurance by management. When tactical people attend budget meetings, they bring minimal numbers expecting efficiency, while management sees the meeting as a team-building ritual. Having a mix of both orientations provides balance. Goal-oriented people excel in crises and keep focus on mission objectives, while relationship-oriented people maintain group cohesion during quiet periods. The promotion process often reveals this divide. Management promotes those who understand relationships and protocols, appearing as ass-kissers to line staff, while line staff see promotion as a reward for job performance rather than organizational fit. When entering a new group, your first challenge isn't solving problems, but finding where you fit in the social hierarchy. Different groups have different approaches to integrating newcomers. Men often work in hierarchical structures where newcomers must work upward to gain respect, while women's groups typically expect immediate contribution. During probationary periods, you're evaluated less on skills than on cultural fit. Groups test for their specific values, whether initiative, camaraderie, or social compatibility. Most organizations prefer people who operate at the monkey level, rather than those who are too independent or self-actualized, as these individuals might prioritize their own judgment over group norms. When people start acting like people instead of focusing on solutions, ask yourself, what's the monkey problem? These primitive status conflicts trigger our limbic system responses, causing workplace tensions that often masquerade as rational disagreements. There are six distinct categories of monkey problems that regularly emerge in professional settings. 1. Status checking. People instinctively need to know where they stand in the hierarchy. New team members frequently test boundaries to find their place, while established members may challenge newcomers to protect their position. This manifests in subtle ways, like interrupting in meetings or questioning decisions. Solution: practice tactical ass-kissing by explicitly acknowledging your place in the hierarchy before presenting ideas. For example, given your experience with these clients, or since you've handled similar projects before. 2. Dominance. These are direct challenges to authority or attempts to establish control. This might appear as publicly contradicting leadership, refusing to follow procedures, or attempting to create alternate power structures within teams. Solution: strategically raise the other person's status and make them feel secure in their authority. Phrases like, "I value your perspective on this," or "your experience would be really helpful here." 3. We don't do that here. Violations of unwritten group norms and traditions trigger strong defensive responses. These could be anything from using the wrong communication channel to proposing changes to long-standing processes. Solution: find successful mentors who can guide you through the organizational culture. Observe carefully how things are done and sincerely apologize when you make mistakes. Build credibility before suggesting changes. 4. You don't belong here. Identity-based exclusion occurs when someone is rejected for being different from the group's dominant culture. This can manifest in subtle ways, like being left out of informal communications or more overt forms of discrimination. Solution: develop cross-group friendships, practice silence when appropriate, demonstrate consistent courtesy, and approach situations with humility. Focus on building bridges rather than highlighting differences. 5. Snowflakes. These are individuals with specific power but little status who seek special recognition, like administrative assistants, IT support staff, or facility managers who keep operations running smoothly but often feel undervalued. They might create bottlenecks or enforce rules rigidly when feeling disrespected. Solution: consistently show genuine appreciation and kindness. Remember names, acknowledge their contributions, and treat them with respect. Small gestures like thanking them specifically in meetings can prevent larger issues. 6. Untouchables. These individuals operate outside normal social conventions due to various protections or circumstances. They include employees who've successfully sued the organization, workers strategically using protective laws, legally protected classes, and those who cultivate unpleasant personas to be left alone. Solution: maintain detailed documentation of performance issues, but focus on dealing with the person rather than the problem. Approach interactions from a human perspective, building rapport where possible, while maintaining professional boundaries. The key to managing any monkey problem is identifying the underlying status or belonging issue driving the behavior. Rather than engaging with surface conflicts, address the deeper need for recognition, security, or inclusion. This approach transforms potentially destructive conflicts into opportunities for strengthening organizational relationships and improving team dynamics. Beyond understanding conflict's underlying mechanisms, Miller offers specific techniques for managing difficult situations. The tactical apology is simple yet powerful. "I'm sorry you're upset." This acknowledges the problem without assuming responsibility while showing empathy. Many people in authority resist apologizing, fearing it shows weakness, but this misunderstands the primate pattern, where high-status members make amends after conflict. If apologizing closes the script and allows progress on the actual issue, the apology serves your purpose, regardless of who was right. Active listening is essential for de-escalating conflicts with mentally ill or emotionally disturbed persons. The two fundamental elements are receiving information clearly and accurately and keeping the subject talking. The biggest obstacle is our tendency to listen to the voices in our own heads instead of the person speaking. Effective techniques include acknowledging emotional states, paraphrasing naturally to confirm understanding, maintaining focus on the subject, and using open-ended questions. Boundary setting becomes necessary in four situations: when dealing with someone from another culture with different rules, someone with diminished mental capacity, someone on a different script than you, or a predator intentionally abusing social norms. With different cultures, be explicit but explain why. For those with mental illness, use explicit, simple language with positive phrasing. With predators, boundaries must be clear, forceful, and backed up. No is a complete sentence. Working from common ground is crucial when dealing across cultural barriers. Focus on similarities rather than differences. With someone experiencing mental illness, like schizophrenia, neither deny their reality nor falsely claim to share it. Instead, focus on what you both genuinely perceive. I can't hear the voices, but I can hear the traffic too. In hostile situations, personalizing yourself by finding tribal commonalities can transform how others perceive you, making it harder for them to other you. The power of reputation isn't something you choose. It's built by patterns of behavior over time. True human alpha status comes from having resources and using them to help others. The formula is simple: resources plus helping others equals respect. Your reputation emerges from what you do, not what you say about yourself. Threat assessment involves four fundamental questions. Is this a dangerous relationship? Is this a dangerous place? Will this situation become violent? Am I being targeted for violence? The simplest indicator of future violence is past violence. If violence has occurred in a relationship, expect it to continue or escalate. Warning signs in new relationships include a pattern of prior bad relationships, especially violent ones, describing all previous partners in negative terms, having no old friends despite seeming popular, and accelerated relationship progression. There are five types of places where violence commonly occur: where young men gather in groups, where minds get altered, drugs and alcohol, where territories are disputed, where you don't know the local rules, and lonely places without witnesses, predatory violence. For social violence, two factors are critical: the threat's comfort level with violence, and whether they feel betrayed, humiliated, or have othered you. People who feel humiliated will likely retaliate with the highest level of force they can muster. Watch for othering, when someone actively works to distance themselves from your group, creating emotional distance that makes violence easier. Most violence is social, using mere threat displays than actual harm. Asocial violence follows a different pattern. It's about hunting, not communication. Watch for signs of adrenaline, including gross motor activity, clumsiness, higher-pitched voice, swallowing and lip-licking, rhythmic movements, and color changes. While redness is part of a threat display, sudden pallor is more concerning. It indicates the body is preparing for imminent action. When determining if you're being targeted by a predator, observe four key factors: witnesses, body language, distance, and foot position. Social violence typically occurs with an audience present, while predatory violence avoids witnesses. The predator will close distance in a lonely place and often stands at an angle rather than directly in front. Watch foot placement. A bladed stance, feet positioned for power and speed, is common among cops and criminals, but rare in social interactions. Now that you understand how the monkey brain operates, you can never return to unconscious patterns. This awareness will transform your life in two profound ways, fundamentally altering how you perceive and interact with the world around you. First, your monkey brain hates being manipulated. Once you recognize how others exploit your status fears to control you, whether through advertising that preys on social insecurities, social media algorithms that trigger FOMO, or workplace dynamics that leverage hierarchical anxieties, your monkey will paradoxically push you to spend more time in your human brain to avoid manipulation. This defensive response becomes a powerful ally in maintaining rational control. Second, as you experience success using these principles, your monkey brain will gradually redefine what makes the best monkey. Instead of valuing primitive displays of dominance, being the loudest, strongest, or most stubborn, it will begin to value being the smartest and cleverest. Your definition of status itself will evolve. You'll start recognizing true leadership qualities over mere assertiveness, strategic thinking over impulsive reactions, and emotional intelligence over raw dominance displays. Your world has changed, not because you've learned new information, but because you now see the patterns in what you already knew. You can predict scripts and choose whether to play the monkey game. In meetings, you'll notice status posturing beneath seemingly logical arguments. In social situations, you'll recognize tribal dynamics driving seemingly individual choices. In personal relationships, you'll see how fear of rejection often masquerades as principled positions. Most of the time, the monkey game serves us well. Our rituals of friendship and acknowledgement make society possible. These social protocols help us build trust, maintain relationships, and create community cohesion. A purely human brain world might feel sterile and pointless, lacking the warmth and connection that our social nature provides. But seeing when the monkey gets in the way gives you choice, the power to engage consciously rather than reactively. This awareness comes with frustrations. Political debates will appear as 5% information and 95% tribalism. You'll watch people destroy relationships over perceived slights, sacrifice opportunities due to pride, and maintain harmful positions just to save face. You'll observe colleagues sabotaging their careers through unnecessary power struggles and friends trapped in cycles of competitive consumption. Your next monkey trap will be believing you're superior because you can see what others cannot, a meta-level status game that requires constant vigilance to avoid. Your monkey brain isn't going away, but now you have tools to make it happy while getting the job done. You can satisfy its need for status through achievement rather than aggression, through wisdom rather than dominance. You can channel its social instincts toward building genuine connections rather than superficial competitions. As the fortune cookie says, your life is about to change, not through elimination of your monkey brain, but through its conscious integration into a more effective whole. Once you understand how conflict patterns work, you can never return to unconscious scripts. This awareness transforms your life in two profound ways. First, your monkey brain hates being manipulated. Once you recognize how others exploit your status fears to control you, your monkey will paradoxically push you to spend more time in your human brain to avoid manipulation. You'll start noticing when others try to hook you into emotional reactions, and you'll develop the ability to choose your response rather than being controlled by ancient programming. Second, as you experience success using these principles, your monkey brain will gradually redefine what makes the best monkey. Instead of valuing primitive displays of dominance, being the loudest, strongest, or most stubborn, it will begin to value being the smartest and cleverest. Your definition of status itself will evolve. Your world has changed, not because you've learned new information, but because you now see the patterns in what you already knew. You can predict scripts and choose whether to play the monkey game. Most of the time, the monkey game serves us well. Our rituals of friendship and acknowledgement make society possible. A purely human brain world might feel sterile and pointless. But seeing when the monkey gets in the way gives you choice. This awareness comes with frustrations. Political debates will appear as 5% information and 95% tribalism. You'll watch people destroy themselves over petty monkey problems they could easily avoid. Your next monkey trap will be believing you're superior because you can see what others cannot. Your monkey brain isn't going away, but now you have tools to make it happy while getting the job done. The most profound insight may be that our deepest emotions, even love, follow these same mechanical patterns. The physical symptoms of falling in love, sweaty palms, dry mouth, racing heart, are identical to an adrenaline response. According to the James Lange theory of emotion, we label these physical reactions subjectively, but the chemical reality is the same. This reveals a profound choice. Recognize that hate, like love, is just a script with an adrenaline label. You can change the script and change the emotion.